Welcome, everyone. My name is Chris Keneally. I'm with Copyright Clearance Center, and our program today comes with a warning in the way of free advice for independent filmmakers. Do it yourself does not mean do it alone. If you want a thing done well, do it yourself. Apparently, according to Google, Napoleon Bonaparte was the first to make that point. But you've likely heard the wisdom from many others, starting with your parents. But did you listen? I only know that Mark Twain was onto something when he said, "The older I get, the more right my father becomes." As independent filmmakers, you have to listen to everyone, from the cast to the crew to the lawyers to the investors. But if you listen well to anyone at all today at Digital Hollywood, you may get the most of what our panel has to say. We say they'll offer insights on what to do at various stages from development, production, post-production, and distribution that will increase your chances of distribution success. In fact, assembling your distribution team is probably as critical as putting together your cast or script, because it's the distribution team who will see you get paid, not the other way around. Copyright Clearance Center is a nonprofit based in Boston that promotes the value of intellectual property and develops services and solutions that make copyright work for everyone. And fundamentally, that's exactly what your distribution team is charged with accomplishing, too. So by way of introduction, I want to welcome you again, and I want to introduce our panel. I'll start with Rob Aft. Rob Aft, welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to have you back at Digital Hollywood. Rob Aft is president of Compliance Consulting, a Los Angeles-based media finance and distribution consultancy, serving a variety of clients, including banks, lawyers, producers, and distributors across the world. Rob had headed distribution and sales at a number of independent film companies and has served seven terms as a member of the board of directors of the Independent Film and Television Alliance. Of note as well, and I have a copy here, he is the author of a wonderful book, which I suggest should be on your reading table, published by WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, From Script to Screen, The Importance of Copyright in the Distribution of Films.
Yeah, don't keep it by your bedside table unless you really, really have trouble sleeping. But it's a free publication. You can get the PDF on WIPO's website. Or just Google WIPO, and From Script to Screen, you'll get it.
A very useful and handy publication as well. And just Google for From Script to Screen.
And WIPO. All squeezed together, WIPO, right. And it'll be the first thing that comes up.
Right. And then to Rob's right is Glenn Reynolds. Glenn, welcome.
Thank you.
Glenn is owner and CEO of Circus Road Films, which he founded in 2006 to provide strategic advisory services to independent filmmakers. Glenn takes the lead in film sales and negotiation for Circus Road. In addition to selling hundreds of titles, he's produced and executive produced several films, including Conversations with Other Women with Aaron Eckhart and Helena Bonham Carter, and Night Train with Danny Glover and Steve Zane. He holds a BA in English from New York University, graduate of the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York, and he grew up on Circus Road in London. And to make this a thoroughly international panel, we have from New Zealand, David White. David, welcome.
Thank you.
David is a leading expert in digital film distribution and the CEO of Auckland-based indie film VOD provider Indie Rain. And I suppose I ought to spell that, IndieReign. Indie Rain, and he regularly advises the New Zealand Film Commission on digital sales strategies, as well as coaches the San Francisco Film Society filmmakers in residence on digital marketing and distribution around the globe. So really a great panel to address these questions about distribution. And Rob, I want to start with you, because I suppose a place to begin is around which aspects of distribution a producer can handle on their own and which they can't. This is the first question people have to ask, and I suppose honesty is the best policy.
Right, and just to back to the days when I started, usually what most filmmakers did back then and most continue to do is make their film and hand it over to a trusted distribution company, Lionsgate, or a studio, or somebody that has a lot of experience, knows exactly what they're doing, how to work all of the various windows, and generate the revenue streams, check those revenue streams, hopefully turn some of that back over to the producers at some point in time. But starting, and there were always sort of these rogue heroes, walking tall. I remember everybody used to talk, oh yeah, he'd take that print of the film around in the trunk of his car and he made millions of dollars. And that was great. And you could do that. You can still do that. It's not an impossible thing. It's just people don't realize that, you know, he spent a couple of years of his life doing that instead of making movies, which is what he should have been doing. He should be making movies, your producers, your directors. And so then about 10 years ago, especially with the explosion of the internet, people started thinking, oh, I can do this myself. And which, yeah, if you want to take the time and the effort and spend years learning how to distribute movies and how to get paid, which a lot of, you know, you think the studios take advantage of, you wait until an independent film, you know, cinema plays your movie for 3 weeks and then gives you nothing. I mean, they, and what do you do? Do you sue them? How do you even know what they should have given you? So what's developed over time, instead of this sort of complete do-it-yourself idea where I'm going to get it onto the internet, well, yeah, you can get it onto YouTube, but can you get it onto Netflix? Can you get it onto Amazon Prime? What about Warner, you know, Time Warner Cable Video on Demand, which is where the real money is? No, you can't. It's aggregators and it's specialists who work in that world. So and then the background I come from, the international world, forget it. International clients do not want to buy movies from individual producers. That's just not what they do. It's not the system. And changing that is, it's just never going to happen. It's not part of anyone's thinking. So what you need is a team. You need people who are specialized in all of these different areas. And in the same way that you needed specialists when you were putting together your financing and specialists when you were actually making the movie, there are specialists who hire out and people who can help coordinate those things. And I believe that my fellow panelists know a lot more about that than I do.
Well, in fact, I want to turn to Glenn Reynolds, because the point Rob just made, Glenn, was the producer of Walking Tall lost a year or two of filmmaking time by trying to get the film sold and so forth. And obviously we want to compress that time we spend on distribution to make it as efficient and as effective as possible. And so do it yourself or do it with the team. There are two tracks there, and as I understand, you can work on them at the same time.
Sure. I mean, I think from the very beginning, you can, you know, when you're first developing your project and going into pre-production, you can, you know, put a part side of your budget for eventual marketing dollars, whether it's, you know, actually pressing DVDs eventually or, you know, advertising in some way or doing a theatrical release. That's one way to prepare for the fact that you have a low percentage chance of getting distribution. And that's just true for all independent films, or at least meaningful distribution. Ultimately, we strike deals all the time for our filmmakers, even when they get distribution, for them to do it themselves at the same time. And it's different from company to company. Some companies will, you know, allow you to do your theatrical release if they're not doing it theatrical. Some companies will sell you DVDs and treat you as a wholesaler so you can go sell them on your own website. Less of them will let you do something digitally. They just worry about, you know, how that's going to conflict with whatever rights they're trying to exploit. That being said, most of my filmmakers that want this right to sell it themselves go and do it themselves and end up selling about 10 copies to their friends and family, and not much else, because as Rob was saying, what really goes into distribution is a lot of time and a lot of effort in order to make it work. You really, you know, can't just turn on a dime and sell it to your, you know, to hundreds of people.
Right.
Just because you're on the internet.
But on the notion of that multi-track approach, it sounds, I'm sure, to some people as if you're competing with yourself. How do you reconcile keeping all those balls in the air?
Well, you're not, in a way, you're not really. The distributors that, I mean, most distributors are okay with you doing it directly because they don't see you as competing with them. They, you know, most of what they're doing, especially if you're not a big theatrical film, if they're putting it in stores or putting it on the internet, it's all point of, they see it as mostly point of purchase. People see it and they buy it. It's not so much that they're being marketed to and they go find it. And they figure if you're going out and trying to sell it, you're going to people you directly market to. They aren't going to see the film anyway. So there's really not really that much competition. You might, you know, if you do have a good plan and the time to do it, it's not a bad thing to do it yourself at the same time that your distributor is doing it as well. You're getting a higher margin for doing so, but you're also spending a lot of time.
Right. David White, you work closely with independent filmmakers around the world, and I suppose for many people in the room, for those of us who just watch these kinds of films, we think that the script, the story, is really what comes first. But you're here to argue the distribution is as critical.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you summed it up pretty well in your intro, Chris, that, you know, if you want a financial success with your movie, then your distribution strategy needs to be seen as important as your script, and it needs to start. Your planning needs to start back when you're writing the script. So I'll probably be able to talk more from an international distribution perspective, more from what we're seeing in the indie layer, maybe how to get some traction on some of those platforms. So I do believe you can go direct yourself, but you need to become experts, because the fact is, if are there any distributors or sales agents in the room? Okay, no offense. But and the fact that you're here is great, because you want to learn about the space. But sales agents and distributors, from my experience in North America, have no idea about how to get your film outside of the big brands, outside of the US. US is 5% of the world's population. The rest is global, and there is a market for your film.
Can you tell us about which particular markets are the most exciting right now? I mean, what I hear is that they are building, I think the figure is 100 movie screens in China every week. So is China on that list?
So China's booming. China's very hard to get your film into. So you probably won't be able to get your film into China. However, India has 1 billion people. India is an emerging market. You've got an emerging middle class. And they're hungry for content. So we're seeing a lot of sales happening through India. We're seeing sales of US content into India, which is exciting. What we also do is we build VOD platforms for other companies. And so we know, I know how you can get your film trending on those sites. Because sometimes you've got to look a little lower. You know, you want to be on iTunes, but on iTunes you're lost in a sea of content. You're not going to be on the homepage. You're not going to be at the top of a genre listing. You may be, but you probably won't be. So my advice is we look at that tier down, what exists, and you know what gives you the best opportunity to be found.
Right. And at the same time, as there's a great promise in the international market, I suppose, again, to Rob's earlier point about you have to be honest with yourself, if the movie's about baseball, that's not going to do so well in India.
Sure. And Rob's correct, and it's very hard. But I'll just say it can be done, and with the right strategy and team, you know, you can get your film trending by, you know, strategically leveraging your cast and crew, family and friends to go to that platform, or buy, watch and review your title over a set period of time in groups, and your film will trend just as high as any blockbuster film that's on there. And so if you've got those tactics and you're thinking about those very early, you can plan for that, and you can have a very smart release cycle where you can get up the list. And it's just like trying to be number one in Google and search rankings. This is the next, I think, holy grail of SEO, is you want to get your film ranking on a digital platform, and there's tactics and ways you can do that.
Right. So if you get successful there, obviously we're driving sales. That's the critical point about all of this. What kinds of retailers are interested in independent film specifically?
Sure. So from what we're seeing, and say if we look at Europe, nearly every VOD platform are launching an indie art house genre channel. We're seeing tailored VOD platforms. There's hundreds of VOD channels around Europe, and Europe is such a landlocked country made of, you know, and there's so many different countries that you can actually release in one transactional, then you can window into subscription and then onto ad support, and then you can repeat, rinse and repeat across every country. And if you've got that model and you've got that plan right, you know, you just do it again and again and again, and you can actually, you know, have, and I'm not talking huge success, but you can have these small successes across multiple countries, and it can, you know, you can make money.
It's a lot of little raindrops. Rob Aft, it is very much a changing scene. You were describing that in your opening remarks, just, you know, how the world has changed. Talk about the way distribution is changing right now. Netflix used to buy a lot, no longer the case.
Right. Well, I think a lot of the platforms that we're building have matured in the same way that a lot of the pay TV services matured, HBO and Showtime. They realized that they didn't need the indie titles so much to drive their subscriber base. So Netflix, by all accounts, is cutting back somewhat on the amount of independent material they're purchasing, but making up for it in in-house production. So they're just shifting the dollars. They're still spending a lot of money, and if you're making House of Cards, you're thrilled. You know, that's what they're doing. But if you're making little indie action movies that they used to purchase in bulk, not so much. But a lot of indie filmmaking right now is watching these trends and knowing that 12 months from now, when your film's finished and ready to be released, it's going to be a different world, and not try one of the, we used to laugh back in the days when the industry was changing in the 90s. I feel really old, but when it was changing in the 90s, and look back at the guys who made movies in the 80s, like Dinosaurs, and they were making these little indie action movies, and you know, the Cynthia Rothrocks and Jean-Claude Van Damme was a big star back then, but it was sort of that same genre, and they kept making them and kept making them, even though the market kept shrinking. And we used to say, well, don't they realize that there is no $55 a pop video cassette rental marketplace out there anymore? And no, they didn't. So what indie filmmakers have, and things are changing even faster now. So it's important to look at when your film's going to be finished and what platforms are going to be available for it. How do you access those platforms? And I guess part of what we're talking about here is what people do you need to be in touch with in order to try to access those?
Well, so answer that question then. I mean, you've been talking about some of the economic realities. What are the things people should be evaluating?
I think that any filmmaker ever making a certain type of genre or budget level of picture should be a consumer of that material themselves and somewhat aware of what else is being consumed. Obviously, if you look at if you go on Netflix or you go on Amazon Prime or Hulu Plus, they'll tell you what's trending. They'll tell you what people are watching. And if you watch a few of the movies that are similar to yours, they'll tell you what other movies are doing well in that same genre. And you can look at those and do your research that way. I'm not saying that you should then go out and try to make exactly those movies. That's not filmmaking. But an awareness of those platforms and how do people get on it. People will say, oh yeah, your film would be great for Amazon Prime. You can't call the guy at Amazon Prime and try to sell him your movie. They only deal with aggregators, so you've got to know what an aggregator is, and you've got to get your movie to the aggregator and know what the aggregators are looking for. And that's just it's research, but you know, there's a lot of information on the internet about all that.
Right, but there's a shortcut, Glenn. I suppose they could work with you.
Call me. That's right.
That's exactly.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, when we work with a film, we're usually, for most films, we're starting with the bigger distributors to see if we can just get it out of your hands so you don't have to do all this stuff. If that doesn't work, then there's mid-level distributors, smaller distributors that have, you know, different levels of access to the DVD retailers, to theaters, to the digital platforms. I think that it is hard. It is hard when you're in the very early stages to figure out exactly what your distribution plan will be, given what Rob said, that everything's going to change in 12 months. I think it's just important to, if you can, put away some money so you can try something if everything doesn't work and you've got this, you're making a movie, no one's stopping you, so you might as well try to get it out there, right? And I think that just one point with regard to Netflix, Netflix, yeah, they're not buying the individual little movies anymore and just filling up their coffers with movies. But there still are companies that they'll pay a certain advance to for a certain level of theatrical release. And so that's where we can come in. We know which companies offer that deal, what it has to be, whether the name value is right or not. And some of those deals make sense and some don't. The money going out necessarily might be more than what you're going to get, so it's even you have to be careful with that as well. But certainly we come in to help at all different levels of trying to figure out what to do with it distribution wise.
Right. So you notice what some of the distribution deals look like. You also know where some of the opportunity lies as well. I would imagine, right? That and to David's point earlier about helping maximize the visibility of a film, you know where there might be a potential niche market for a particular film.
Well, it's certainly it's we have to deal with what's coming in the door, right? So, and we see all kinds of movies, but we're staring at mostly we're taking a film out. At a top level, we're trying the Magnolias of the world, and that's about it being auteur-driven, about being at a major festival, And then there's nothing scientific about it. It's like what makes a great movie and what makes it acceptable to those guys. Things click with an audience, things click with Sundance, then it clicks with them.
Right. Well, you just used the F word, right? Festivals. And I understand that
yes, dirty word.
And I understand that one of the approaches that Circus Road takes is to start talking as early as possible to the festivals about a movie.
Sure. Yeah, one of the things we do is we know over the years we've gotten to know all the programmers at the major festivals and some of the secondary festivals. And we definitely help our filmmakers by calling them to plug the film. And to help get in, we don't have any kind of silver bullet to get into festival, but certainly we can make sure that it's going beyond the volunteers and the interns that are usually the first line of defense for watching these movies. We can make sure that someone significant is watching it at least to give the film a fair shot.
And there's more out there than Sundance.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, to a certain degree, there's Sundance and Toronto are unique among North American distributors festivals in having all the buyers there. And creating that atmosphere of trying to sell a movie to a big player, even stepping down though to South By and Tribeca and a few of those festivals, still great festivals. But there's only one or two big buys coming out of those, and it's still hard to get buyers in a room at those festivals. But there is great branding, is a great launch pad. So sometimes we're starting to sell a film there and eventually selling it right thereafter. And we even use even smaller festivals where you may not see a single buyer. They may some buyers may show up to be on a panel like at Seattle or Austin or something like that, but they're not really there to see movies. But still, it's a festival that's over time has a great reputation. It looks good on a box, and we'll use that. It's there's nothing definitive about it though. You can have great laurel leaves and not make a difference too, but it's certainly we use every asset we possibly can.
Certainly makes you feel good, and you can show your mom back home.
Yeah.
but David, wait. What's interesting is that Glenn's talking about a more traditional theatrical approach to things, and Indie Rain is really about VOD. So distinguish that and help people in the room sort of weigh those options.
Sure. So and I'll jump on a couple of points Rob made too, which were really valid. And I think one thing I'd say is don't look back and 24 months later still be on the festival circuit. Sometimes you just got to get to market and just let go of that dream you're going to get picked up for a three-picture deal. Just let that go and just get to market. And if you've got that plan at the start, then that's not such a scary option. You're prepared for that. One thing I would say also that Rob said is keep a little bit of a budget back. And your most important asset in all of digital sales is your poster. That never, and your poster at that size, that gets what people. That's what people click on. Now, that is probably, I don't know how. I just get so frustrated when I see a poster that's made by someone's cousin who did design at high school, and that's their poster, and they've got this brilliant film, but it looks rubbish. We've done experiments where we put a little film laurel on a poster and one without it, and we'd had 130% increase in click-throughs. Hmm. Now, those clicks mean revenue. It's all about clicks. So you've got to look at, for example, Google will change. They tested hundreds of shades of blue before they get to the blue that gets the most clicks. It's just every little detail matters when you're selling online. So you do your research, the platforms you want to be on, and sometimes you can't do this until right at the end, like Ed said, and you've got to look and where is my film going to list on the site? Is it this genre? Is it this subgenre? What are the posters that's there? Take a screenshot, put it into Photoshop or something. Put your poster somewhere there. Does it stand out? How can I change it? Be bold with it. All you need is someone to click, and then they're reading a synopsis or watching a trailer. And that can just mean so much to the bottom line. It's not crazy. So if I had a marketing budget, I'd put it all on my poster. Hmm. That would be my hot tip there.
A great tip. I bet people will write that down or tweet it. But talk about resources management otherwise. I mean, beyond that, you said sort of keeping an eye on your budget, watching your dollars, making sure you're not burning cash too fast.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very easy to put it all in going around a festival circuit or, into staying in hotels or whatever. And just, make sure you've got it. You maybe identified a good graphic designer or a poster artist, and just put your budget into that. Some sites will show, some sites show a big trailer and they'll have a film still there. That's very important. So you've got to look at how they display the content and tailor your artwork for that. So you might get a poster that's getting click-throughs and then you've got a rubbish still where they've taken a screenshot from the middle of your film. So you want them to click on the poster, and if there's a big trailer, you want that to look just as inviting they play it. And then hopefully, you're doing all these things to help conversion. And you know, an extra 3% in conversion can mean hundreds of thousands of dollars. An extra 100% or 1,000% conversion, which is easily done, can mean so much. And then again, it helps your film trend because more people are looking at it.
How early do you want the filmmakers to approach you so they don't make these mistakes before they hand you all of this? They've spent all their marketing budget.
Yeah, and that sort of leads on to another great point is a lot of these smaller platforms, you can find who are the influencers. So who are making the decisions on which film becomes a staff pick? Who are the bloggers on the site that are writing reviews on this content? And you can find them on Twitter, you can find them on LinkedIn, and you can start building a relationship. Now, you don't sell them straight away. You just engage, you reshare their content, and then you build that relationship. Now, if people have done that with me and said, hey, my film's going to be releasing in a month, I'll say, great, well, look, I'll put you in touch with our head of marketing. She's going to help. We're going to cover it on a blog. And that film's no better than anything else, but I've got that relationship. So I think you start that early. Start building a relationship, and then you ask the questions, and you're going to get a lot better and honest responses. And look at countries, too. So there's obviously differences in culture and what people like, and so really just do your research there on what's driving clicks.
And does Indie Rain do some? Sorry,
yeah,
Chris. I actually Chris and I worked on coming up with an idea for this panel mainly because I wanted to know all this stuff from these guys. So I don't have to take them to lunch now. Would you get involved in helping somebody do their poster in a way that is going to make them succeed better on those platforms?
So we do try to have that real personal touch with what we do, whereas other platforms we power, which are totally not branded by us and you wouldn't know we built them, they wouldn't touch it. You know, you just send them their artwork, and so what you one thing on the back of that is make sure you have consistent sizes, you know what formats all these platforms need, and you make sure your film is encoded correctly and it's from HD down, you know, so you want to make sure that you're sending the right assets or they won't list it. And sometimes people forget that, and it's left with the producer, and they're like, oh, I've got this copy here, and I need to get this 160-gig file to this guy, and I can only send it via, you know, whatever method they accept. So you've got to make sure that you've saved a little bit of money for a bit of encoding as well.
Glenn Reynolds, on the point about relationships, if people are beginning to work with you at the very start of a project and with you there for the life of it, really, when does that relationship end, or does it evolve into something else?
It goes on forever. We get calls years out with people have trouble getting royalty checks or statements. You know, we usually have a 1 year term on our agreements, just because you got to end it sometime. I've made films with producers that I started out being their sales agent. You know, so it just kind of depends on how it goes and where the film ends up and how much trouble they get into down the line. I usually get the troubled calls down the line as opposed to the, hey, it's going great calls.
Well,
so
yeah, there are some tough lessons that get learned in the process,
yeah.
And people make their first film only so they can have enough money to make the second film.
Sure.
What are the things that you've heard people have learned that you could share with this audience here that when a distribution arrangement doesn't go the way it was intended?
Well, the one important thing I try to tell all my producers is try to become best friends with your distributor, regardless of what they do. Because the minute you start pissing them off, whether it's justified or not, they stop returning your phone calls. I mean, it's hard to get them on the phone anyway after you make a deal. You know, taking them to lunch, you know, buying them flowers, whatever you have to do just to keep buttering them up along the way, goes a long way. The filmmakers that come in thinking they've got it, you know, that they're entitled and their film is the best thing ever and that everybody should bow down and worship it, tend to get lost because people just don't respond well to that. And I see that so often that it's definitely something I tell my filmmakers right off the bat.
And you know, Rob Aft, commitments, relationships, it sounds like we're talking about getting married here. And in a sense, we are.
Mm-hmm.
And some marriages wind up in probate court with a divorce. So how would a distributor make evaluations? I know a lot of your work, the WIPO book, for example, is really about alerting people to the dangers, to the pitfalls. So as much as we're hearing about all the great things that these folks can do for you, if it's so easy to get online and represent yourself as an agent or as a consultant, how do you know who's for real, who's not? What are the questions a distributor should ask?
Right. Well, definitely look at their track records, and then ask the distributor, if you're a producer, ask the distributor for testimonials and some phone numbers and some emails of people that they've worked with in the past. I know on Glenn's site, because I was checking it out for a friend the other day, I know on Glenn's site, you've got a list of them. You've got a list of producers that I assume you'd be happy to give somebody that phone number and say, oh, yeah, sure. This person, yeah, could call them up and say, and ask them about how that is. And ask them, without revealing any detailed financial information, how did you help this person and what did it cost them? Was it financially a good decision for them to go with you? Do you think that you could have done something better? You know, everybody could have done something better on everything. And but I like Glenn's advice about being nice, because that's, you know, the Patrick Swayze movie Roadhouse, where he gives great advice to his employees, which is, you know, be nice until it's time not to be nice. And they ask him, well, you know, how do we know? And he says, I'll tell you. And because they will never know. And the producer's never going to know when it's time not to be nice. That's the job for their lawyer. That's the job for their accountant or their distribution representative, which, you know, Glenn can tell them, oh, yeah, these guys are totally screwing you over. Audit them tomorrow and or sue them, because it might be enough money that's worth suing them. Or there might be other options. But no, it's time not to be nice. But right.
And the basis for a lot of arguments and a lot of court dates is the contract itself, right? So that would be a critical piece to really be looking at carefully before you sign.
Right. Understanding the contract. Unfortunately, misunderstanding contracts is sort of the basis for this whole industry.
That's putting it mildly, right?
It is. It's really, so many people just don't understand what they're signing. And as a producer, you need to understand every single piece of every single word in an agreement. If you don't understand it and your lawyer won't explain it to you, change lawyers. And if it's not clear in the contract, put an example in. And even then, it won't be clear when there's a dispute, because it will be interpreted in different ways. And a lot of the disputes out there tend to center around the same things over and over and over. Promises unfulfilled. Well, I thought you were going to do $1 million on my movie. You only did $100,000. I'm going to sue you. And it's important to know exactly what you're expecting, what's been promised as opposed to what's been implied, what's guaranteed, what's a guarantee as opposed to a promise, what's a material breach as opposed to just a immaterial breach. Those are, if you get to that point, you've already lost. If you have to revert to the contract and try to figure out in minute detail whether clause 23 on page 60 was violated.
That's when you know not to be nice, when you have to go find the contract.
Yeah, and there's almost no good solution at that point. And you're right, it's like a marriage. You could spend the next 3 years trying to get out of it, trying to punish the person,
The contract's a prenup all in favor of the distributor.
Yeah. Yeah. Tends to be him, because the distributor understands it. Is the other thing is that so often the producer doesn't understand their audit rights, or they don't understand the cost of delivery schedule. You know, you were talking about delivery. You've got a studio delivery schedule is 12 pages long, and I had a producer ask me, I don't really need to deliver all this, do I? Said, yeah, or they don't pay you. And can we negotiate it? No, it's a studio. They want everything.
We're going to take questions at the end of the discussion here. David, talk about distributors and how they see that relationship, how they see the contract when they put it down in front of you.
Sure. I mean, from my experience, you know, we do work with a lot of distributors, and some are great and some are bad. Some only care about just getting all this content, bundling it together and shipping it off to platforms as one sort of aggregated package, and you're not going to get that sort of individual love for your title. And that's where I think it's really important that you do become their best friend and that relationship part. So, you know, I think if you can find the right distributor and you can build that connection, and you know they actually believe in your film, it's not just another thing for their shelf, then that's probably the most important piece, is make sure. Which is someone's heart, because they'll tell you that this is it. I'm going to sell it all around the world, and this is the one thing I'm focusing on. Just try to sort of get through all those layers and find the, you know, and I think ask for the proof, do your research,
Right. It's like someone who tells you, you can trust me, I'm not like the others.
Exactly.
You know? David, what about white labeling? Sort of pros and cons regarding that.
So, yeah, I'm kind of pro white labeling your content and selling under your own brand. What a lot of filmmakers don't do is think of the lifetime value of their customer. And when you're across all these platforms and when you're through a distributor, you don't own that customer base. And that can be quite hard because you've built up, you've done all this promotion and you've done all this work to sell on these platforms, but you don't have those email addresses. So when it comes to your next film, these guys probably won't know that you've got another film out. So I think it's really important if you can create your own brand as part of that whole mix. Now, you might not have to spend much time on that, but I think it's very important that you're building your brand and you know, because you're going to have that window where you're going to sell to family and friends. And if you haven't got it, this is if you haven't got a deal, you know, why not get 100% of the revenues through your own platform first and then go out? So really think that through, but I wouldn't be afraid to, you know, have your own tools, have your own branded experience. I think that's important.
A phrase people still talk about in our side of things in Copyright Clearance Center is DRM and no DRM. Can you tackle that one? That's digital rights management, essentially locking down the content or letting it be free.
Sure. So with our technology, we can offer both. So we, you know, for example, we can sell Disney content, blockbuster content, but to get Disney's catalog, we had to fill a tech document out there that was that big. Mm. And how are we going to handle every single device? How many devices can be registered to this film? What quality can it play on this phone? What DRM protection encryption are you using? And it's just so in depth. And then you've got the indie side where it's sort of, we don't really care about DRM. Let the people have the film and do what they want. And I think we're still on that real, I think, Hollywood versus Silicon Valley, that share, open versus closed, and it's I think it's coming together, and I think some form of protection is important, but sometimes we can get so hung up on protecting our film, we don't just get it out there, and when we hold it back, that sometimes is what causes the issues around piracy. So probably from a personal level, I'm not a DRM fan, and that I think the customer, you just give them access, you know, and if you worry too much about privacy, it's all that you're going to focus on. So yeah, I think it just suits. If you've got a film that's, you know, going to be bigger, that's going to be across a lot of the big platforms, then I think DRM is a real consideration, and making sure that the platforms you're on are protecting your content. So you've just got to make that call internally, and how much you. Yeah, I can't really answer that on a personal.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah,
it's film by film specific.
It's a philosophical question almost, yeah. And I know in the publishing world, Tim O'Reilly has said there's one thing worse than piracy, and that's obscurity.
Sure. Yeah, right. Exactly.
So if your film is popular enough for somebody to want it, that's probably not a bad thing.
No.
Glenn Reynolds, I want to take you back to the theatricals, because that's an important piece of this in terms of helping get all the other plays involved. Can you sketch for us what are some do's and don'ts around theatrical release? What should be done? Which cities? How much is expected to cost?
Well, first of all, I don't think theatricals should be done without some sort of traditional distributor partnering with you in some way. Either they're taking the reins and doing the theatrical, but if you're doing it yourself, there seems to be a moving target of how many theaters you have to be in these days to get a certain level of digital distribution out there. So, for instance, at the end of last year, if you had a deal with a decent digital aggregator and put your film out in 20 cities, including New York, for a week, then they could get you into the In Theaters Now box on the cable VOD systems and on a decent placement on iTunes and new noteworthy section and places like that to really – and really what you're doing when you do that is you're mirroring what Magnolia and IFC are all doing. They're all been attacking that space like crazy because all their DVD value is going down, and they've found a lot of value there. The hard part of that is everybody's charged into that space, and so the MSOs have Time Warner, et cetera, have all now raised the criteria for which you need to hit in order to be in that space. So now it's not just any 20 cities; it's the top 20 markets, and it's a full week run. You can't cheat by just doing a special screening on a Saturday morning in Poughkeepsie. You know, you gotta do something really significant to get that space. Now that drives the cost of that theatrical quite high, and then is it worth it? Then you're having to spend, you know, $150,000, $200,000 probably at a minimum, to if you know what you're doing, if you have someone that really knows what they're doing to do that. And can you get that back? It's debatable. Short of that, I don't, you know, the one city, one theater, a couple city theatrical is nice for friends and family and maybe, you know, a little publicity for yourself for the future to say I had a theatrical release, but it's not going to drive your ancillary rights at all.
If you open in New York or Los Angeles, though, you will get reviews.
You'll get reviews, but you'll make the same amount of money, and probably actually you'll make less money than if you release it directly to the DVD or the digital platforms, because all that revenue is, you're not going to make box office above what you spend, and it's not going to move the needle at all for your ancillary rights.
Right, and so again, we keep hearing about sort of managing resources, knowing what's going to work, but sort of placing, if not safe bets, at least well thought through bets, right? You just don't want to kind of just throw some money on the table and see what happens. Rob, after you helped me put this program together, so I'll give you the last word before we get to some questions from the audience. And you know, of all the lessons that independent distributors learn and weep about later on, is there one that really stands out for you?
I hear more people saying, "God, why did I go with that person? Why did I marry her?" It's that director, that distributor, that foreign sales agent, that producer's rep, and there's a lot of regret. But what I try to tell people to do is look at things very clearly when you're going into them. Do as much research as possible, but then try to stay happy with that decision. Yes, you went with a terrible, terrible distributor, but they were the only ones making you an offer. So it was that or nothing, and you forget that a year later when you hate these people. Write a letter to yourself, stick it in your safe, and a year later open it up and say, "You idiot, that was the only deal available." And also, you made a movie, and that's amazing. I can't do that. The idea of making a movie sounds horrible to me. It's years of your life and your heart and your soul, and then somebody's going to take it and treat it like tomatoes they just picked in their garden and took to the farmer's market. I don't understand why people do it, but God love them. I mean, that's why any of us have jobs. And
well, you can ask these people afterwards, Rob, and I'm sure they'll tell you. Yeah. I want to thank Rob Aft from Compliance Consulting, Glenn Reynolds from Circus Road Films, and David White from Indie Rain. So thank you three for the discussion.